Yeah, to the extent that I can, yes, there will be internal control communications, observations, and recommendations at both the national office level and at the individual station level. As you know, the way our audit process works is, as we identify a control deficiency, whether that deficiency is at the national office or at a particular station or a combination thereof, we will communicate that, yes.
I'd like to be able to check.
Who's that?
My name is Melinda Arley.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can
I'll
you
put you
me?
On the stack.
Can
yes.
you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear
I'm
me?
Sorry.
Yes, we can hear you.
Right.
This is Janet. I'm just requesting if Paul could be a little more specific about what these internal controls might be.
You know, I think the observations that we have made are probably, it probably makes most sense because that communication is to the audit committee. It probably makes most sense for us to bring that communication to the audit committee, make sure that from a clarification perspective, you know, there are no factual matters that need to be clarified before actually discussing specifics of the particular promise.
Paul, you're finished, and Raul, you have anything to say?
Yes. With respect to the individual radio stations' internal controls, when our auditors make the recommendation or make the observation, we will, the management, that means the national office, Summer and I, myself, would make sure that we implement changes that would satisfy the some of the internal controls that are being brought forward. And our goal is to implement these internal controls consistently on each of the units of the Pacifica Foundation. That means including the national office, the PRA, the Pacifica Radio Archives, and the five radio stations. There will be a control, a double check, a review of those internal controls, and that would be my responsibility to make sure that those whatever procedures or internal control procedures that we implement are being executed in all levels. And that would mean, you know, visiting radio stations, making sure that we internally perform tests and examinations of transactions that are being recorded at the local level, at each station level, as well as the national level. And that would be coming shortly. Thank you.
Okay, William, you have William Hairwagon. You have the floor.
And do I?
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Berg, William Hairwagon from New York. On you have talked about the Note 3 liquidity, where you mentioned the $791,000 deficit in covering the net restricted assets. I've been a corporate auditor, a corporate accountant, not a CPA, and I've been following these audit procedures for years, even though this is my first year on this committee. I'm surprised that in your liquidity statement you didn't modify it to include this over $4 million gap between, if you take the difference between net assets and net liabilities. It's supposed to be, to come up with working capital, it's net assets minus net liabilities, current, excuse me, both current. And not only the number of the liabilities isn't just a little bit smaller, it's way negative. And I don't understand how the concept of these are historical documents that, you know, people are going to look back at these 2, 3, 4 years from now, because I'm now looking at the last three audits, and I think the going concern alert being missing is going to be misleading. It'll make it look like, oh, Pacifica's getting a little better. We're not. We're getting, we're this year is worse than last year. And when I say this year, that's you know, almost a year ago. We haven't even gotten any reports yet for this year. But I really think, I'm wondering why that's not a reflection of those numbers and not included in your notes.
Well, to answer your question, the financial statement footnotes, of course, are the footnotes of Pacifica Foundation. Pacifica Foundation, if it wishes to modify its draft footnotes to further emphasize the liquidity issues, it is free to do so. The liquidity footnote in the financials references the fact that the organization has experienced significant losses in current and prior years, that these factors have resulted in the organization developing a significant deficit in net assets, and that the ability of the organization to sustain its operations in the long term depends on its ability to reduce costs and increase sources of cash flow. And so the organization in its footnote does call out to the reader of the financials, and as you know, the footnotes to the financials are an integral part of those financials as identified on each page of the financial statements. And those footnotes are an integral part, and I would expect that anybody evaluating the financials would read both the statements themselves and the footnotes, which are quite open about the liquidity issues. They do call them out. Now, with respect to expanding that footnote, I think that's a conversation for the management of the organization as to whether they wish to do that.
Okay, I have a quick follow-up. I was under the impression last year in prior audits that this going concern alert came from the auditors, not from management. Are you saying that this liquidity statement does not come from you, but it comes from management?
Yes, the liquidity statement, the opinion on the financial statements comes from the auditor. So in prior years, last year you had an audit opinion that comes from the auditor that called out the going concern. In the current period, as a result of two factors, the first factor being the auditor's evaluation of the ability of the organization to remain a going concern from a period of 12 months from the balance sheet days. And our conclusion as auditors is that the organization will be able to remain a going concern for a period from 12 months from the balance sheet days. The second item relates to the fact that the organization has some hard assets. Now, I think as the IED noted, there is no intention to liquidate those hard assets, but the organization does have the ability, if it needed to liquidate some assets to supplement needed cash flow.
And this is Summer, if I could jump in.
Go ahead, Fred. Summer.
Okay, thanks. Just to address in terms of management and addressing cash flow, to be clear, in terms of real numbers and where we have been significantly bleeding cash as an organization. I know this is all very painful for everyone, but the reality is that in this past year, by moving out of Wall Street, even after you adjust what we're paying to be in two other locations, we're saving $300,000. That's after I take out rent for those other two. The staff layoffs of 2 weeks ago are a net savings of $900,000 per year. So the two together is $1.25 million at the one station that has been consistently losing incredible amounts of money. On top of that, I've negotiated with one of our larger vendors to significantly reduce their contract by more than half for six-figure savings this year. And I'm going to work on our other vendor for that. So in terms of the speed with which one can stop spending more than one is making, I'm working on reaching $1.5 million by now since I've been here. And some of these things are difficult and will obviously require some difficult transitions. But, in fact, that's where we were losing the money at an incredible rate. And so I just want to be clear that, like, management is, in fact, addressing the expense-to-income problem that's going on in this network. And we're going to continue to aggressively look at what needs to be done to see to it that we're able to pay our bills and not be in this position, and to renegotiate any remaining vendor contracts which may be causing an issue for our books. Okay? Thank you.
Follow up again for Mr. O'Grady. I don't think that the value of the station licenses are apparent to anybody. They don't appear in any financial statements, and therefore I don't think they valid reasons for saying that we're not in this horrible going concern alert status. Thank you.
Can you repeat that last comment, please? I didn't quite hear it.
Certainly, Mr. O'Grady. You talk about the value, and some are, I guess, convinced you, about the value of the station licenses, that they can be sold, and that way we really have tens of millions. I don't think it's really hundreds, but tens of millions of dollars of assets. If these assets are not listed in any financial statement, there's no way for anybody to see this, and I don't think that's a valid reason for management or for the auditors to say that we're not really in trouble.
And I will make one follow-up. I wish to make a follow-up comment to that. Again, I would like to reemphasize that the auditor's responsibility is to evaluate the organization's ability to remain a going concern for the period of 12 months from the balance sheet date. Our conclusion and the reason that we did not include a going concern opinion is that based on our evaluation as auditors, we do not believe there is a substantial doubt that the organization will not be able to remain a going concern for a period of 12 months from the balance sheet date. With respect to the station licenses, we haven't in any way evaluated the valuation of those licenses. That was not something that's within the scope of our audit, and accordingly, we did not do that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Brenda, you're next.
It's Lawrence. Chair, can I get back on the stack?
Yes.
Chair, am I on the stack?
Who's that?
Lizette was on long time ago, Fred.
Okay, I'm putting you on the stack, Lizette.
Am I on there, too? It's Melinda Eiley Jones.
Yes, Melinda, you're on there.
So it was Lizette and then Jane Gatewood and then Melinda and then Lawrence again?
What I have my stack here is I have Brenda, Jane, Melinda, myself, now Lizette, and Lawrence.
Lizette was ahead of me.
Lizette is...
Sorry, Jane gave Lizette was ahead of me.
Yeah, I'll put her ahead of you, okay? Very good. Okay, Brenda, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. I have a two-part question. One, how did the auditors determine the amount of assets we have? How was that determined or how was that classified? And a follow-up to the regards to assets, So in my, I'm curious as to why the non-liquid assets would still allow us to no longer be in a growing concern if they're not liquid assets. Like it would take time in order to sell a building and to relocate a station. So I'm curious as to why that was a determining factor from what you mentioned to no longer be a going concern. Thanks.
I'll answer that. Thank you. This is Paul. Thank you again for your question. I think there is I think there's some uncertainty here on the phone with respect to the going concern opinion. You know, as I mentioned, our responsibility as the auditor is to evaluate the organization's ability to remain a going concern through a period of 12 months subsequent to balance sheet date. So we have evaluated the organization's ability to remain in business September 30th of 2013. We also have included a liquidity footnote in the financial statements. Our management, should I say, have included a liquidity footnote that we feel should be there, that points out that there has been recurring operating losses, there is net asset deficit, and the organization's long-term ability to sustain its operations depends on its ability to reduce operating costs and increase cash flow. So, you know, there should be no uncertainty from any of the members on the call that there are liquidity challenges at the organization. There are cash flow challenges, and the organization has, over the last number of years, been losing money. I think that, as Summer mentioned, the organization has, our management has been pursuing a plan to turn that around. And it's certainly important to turn that around because the organization reported a significant deficit this year in net assets. And were the organization to continue on a similar path, that deficit would grow and the organization's long-term sustainability would be challenged. So it's important, I think, to realize that the going concern footnote is not being removed because of an evaluation that we as auditors performed on, you know, the valuation of radio licenses, et cetera. I think it's important to make that clarification.
Can I make sure I'm understanding you correctly? Sorry, this is Brenda again. So what you're saying is, since the organization is still in existence 12 months after this audit was supposed to be completed, you're saying that it's no longer a growing concern for this particular year since we're still here?
No, I didn't say that. I said that the emphasis paragraph in the auditor's opinion is included in those instances where the auditor concludes that there is substantial doubt about the organization's ability to remain a going concern for a period of 12 months subsequent to the balance sheet date. And that is the basis for the substantial doubt paragraph not being included in the opinion and the liquidity footnote being included in the financials. We feel as auditors that it is important, and management has concurred, that it is important to have a liquidity footnote that explains to the readers of the financials that there are liquidity challenges, the organization has experienced significant losses, and the organization's ability to sustain itself over the long term depends on its ability to address those issues.
Summer or Raul, do you want to say anything?
I don't know. I think Paul's sufficiently answered it. He's the auditor. I think this is an auditor determination as to whether a business has the ability to continue in business or not, and I leave that in his professional hands. Thank you.
Okay. Lizette, you're next.
Thank you. I would just make a statement and then ask my question. And the statement relates to the going concern determination. And I get the feel I could be wrong, but I get the feel that the going concern determination is dependent on a number of things. But one of the things that I observed is that because we're spending less, we're no longer of a going concern. I believe that we were in a better state some years ago than we are now, even though we're saving money. And I don't quite understand it, but I don't want to labor the point. The second thing, and this is my question now, I would like to know what are some of the, and concrete examples of some of the internal control challenges we've had thus far. And I'm asking this because some of the things that I've uncovered in the last 6 months or so, I believe should have been picked up by an audit, but they were not picked up. So I just want to have some idea of some of the challenges that we have and what is being put in place to rectify them.
Fred, may I?
Go ahead.
Lizette,
go ahead, Summer.
Thank you. And I think some of these things probably have to be explored more in closed session, but every year's audit since I've been with the organization has cited internal control issues, and many of them have been repeat comments regarding our policies and procedures internally. And these things have to be changed in terms of practice. These things have been flagged in multiple year audits and not necessarily previously corrected by management. There are things in addition to what are cited by auditors that have been brought to my attention by our insurance carriers in terms of standard practices to assure proper internal controls. Paul, if you want to address when you might have a list of what those items would be in the management letter, perhaps you could address the members' concern in terms of when they might anticipate seeing those recommendations from your firm. But I just want to say, Lizette, I do believe that many of these things have been, in fact, cited by auditors, but not necessarily rectified in a timely fashion. And hopefully we'll change.
Yeah, I would say to respond to the comment, there were, and I think the comment was that there was some surprise that there were no internal control items noticed. But that, in fact, is not actually the case. There were a number of internal control items noticed. The items, some of which are a recurring nature, some of which were noted in the current period, some of which are more relevant than others, those will all be communicated to the audit committee. Our responsibility as auditors is to communicate internal control matters to the audit committee. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, I feel it's the more appropriate means by which to do that is to communicate them with the audit committee and management and discuss them with the audit committee and management. And I'm sure that the audit committee and management, after going through those observations, those recommendations, and discussing the nature of those items and the remediation of those items, would be happy to share them with other members who have expressed concerns regarding the controls. So I guess to summarize, you know, yes, there are certainly internal control recommendations, observations, and communications that will be communicated to the audit committee consistent with our professional standards, as we are required to communicate those and the nature of those. I think executive forum, once we have a chance to go through those and talk to management a little more about them and digest them and have management and the audit committee digest them, I think, and that would be probably a better time for the members of the audit committee and members of management to discuss those further.
Chair, it's important that we be a little bit more concrete than we are right now. And let me, through you, Chair, let me give you an example for you to comment on. I just heard that for at least a year, we have been undervaluing our gifts during the fund drive. Now, is that part of an internal control matter? And if so, how come we didn't pick it up?
Paul, do you want me to take this, or?
Yeah, you can take that, Summer.
Okay, that's not an internal control issue. That was actually the result of the CPB audit, which was conducted looking over more than one fiscal year. And that's not so much a control issue as an evaluative standard issue as to what all of our stations were dinged to a certain extent for failing to adequately state a value for certain types of premiums that were sometimes donated to the stations, but for whatever reason, for not actually giving a sufficient value to the premium and thereby overstating the amount of the donation that could be attributable to listener support after deduction of the value of the premium. The internal control issues are things that run more along the lines of: do key personnel that handle money take an annual vacation? Does the same person that handles the money coming in also have some control over it going out? These separation of duties and functions in order to assure against any wrongdoing, that you set up an environment which does not allow people to stray off the path by having a concentration of various financial powers in the same hands, and no oversight or checks and balances. It's sometimes a failure of check and balance. And so I don't think that the internal control issues would have in any way addressed the overstatement of listener income, but they have been cited at various stations over various issues. And I'm sure once the management letter comes back, it would probably be appropriate that Fred, as your chair of the audit committee, that you would have a discussion of the management letter and the internal controls, because although I've begun addressing these things, by no means is everything resolved in any way, shape, or form, and I think we all know that. There are many things that needed to be addressed, and certainly changing practices at the local level can be a significantly time-consuming process. So I would suggest that it would be appropriate for the audit committee to, and I'd be happy to join in on that call, since that involves actual management decisions as to how does one implement proper internal controls and change the culture if certain things have not been done in a way that they should have been done. So I would suggest that after we get that management letter, that Fred schedule one of your audit committee meetings for us to specifically discuss that, and that Raul and I join that call. And that way, specific questions about a station, if it's your home station and there are things cited, that we can discuss those, and we can also discuss what remedies are being undertaken at the national level to address these issues. It is my desire that we not continue to have management letters year after year that cite repeat comments, because that shouldn't happen. When something's brought to the attention of the organization, it should, to the best extent possible, be addressed so that it's not still an issue the following year.
So there will come a time when we will discuss some of the things we uncovered at PFW.
I think that would be appropriate, Lizette. And Fred, I'm sure that you can facilitate that, okay?
All right.
Just to add on to what Lizette's question is.
Who's speaking, by the way?
This is Raul Salvador. Raul.
Okay, go.
With respect to the specific question that you have addressing the premiums and the understatement thereof, I had sent out a proposed procedure. It's mostly a procedural deficiency in recording these premiums, but I have since then sent out a proposed procedure that will be applied across the board regarding how those premiums are going to be valued, those donations and those gifts that we provide listeners for in exchange for their support. There's a procedure that we presented to the our auditors for their review, so that if there are any questions on the accounting or whatever entries that we need to make on those transactions, it will be addressed in that write-up that we just presented. We will share that with you once the auditors have a look at it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Fred. Paul, do you know when that management letter, what time frame it's going to be available in?
Yes, we will begin drafting that management letter in form for presentation to the audit committee probably the end of this week. And typically it takes about a week or so for us to accumulate comments, evaluate comments, and communicate them in the appropriate form to those charged with governance.
Chair, point of information, do we know how late we are with our audit? Audit report?
Are you asking in the overall? I mean, are we on our first or second extension with the IRS? I mean, we're months past due. Everything with the CPB was required months ago. It's why I'm in constant communication with them and, frankly, throwing ourselves upon their mercy because we're so late. I don't know what to say. I mean, Paul, you could speak to how many months that is, but well past due when this should have been done. So.
Yeah, no, it's significantly past due.
The audit was due March 1st.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Jane, you're next.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay.
We can hear you.
Thank you. On top of page 15, this is just the presentation, the leases that we talk about, I'm guessing that must all be.
Jane, you've got a terrible echo on your line.
Is this any better?
No.
Hello, is this any better?
Yes.
Hello, is this any better? Hello?
Yes, it's a little bit better, and it's still there.
Sorry,
are you on are you on speakerphone, or could you go?
No, I'm on a headset. I'm not sure what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, try and speak as close to the mic as possible.
No, that's not the problem. If you can't hear me clearly, I'll go to get a phone and try to call it back in. It's too hard to hear me.
Why don't you try that, and I'll have Melinda go next. Melinda, you have the floor.
Okay. I just want to make a comment as a person who's been a part of this committee for two audits. I'm concerned, and I hope that we've addressed that. And Alpha had a comment, a question I wanted to ask this summer. But first thing I wanted to ask, because it's always been concerning to me when the auditors go to the different stations, and literally I've heard that the stations basically just got up and said, no, we're not going to give you this information. I want to be sure they're not going to pull that anymore, because we can't do that. That's not how you stay in business. And secondly, I also wanted to ask Summer as well, something I've been asking a great deal with our current LSB, or our LSB over the years. Because of the fact that we're trying to do things that would save money, and a lot of times it does require us, as we've seen like in the elections where we made changes in the schedule according to the bylaws. I want to know why it is that a radio station is not doing more, or network, I should say, is not doing more in terms of using the more up-to-date technology so that we could, like, not have as many trips with our PNB, and we could actually do things like FaceTime and all that sort of thing. But we could actually have these people talking face-to-face, iMessage and all that. And those are the two concerns I have.
Thank you, Melinda. I'm sorry, was the first one addressed to Paul?
Yeah, and then the second to Lisa.
To me, and I'll take the second one. Go ahead, Paul.
There was a question with respect to the comment with respect to the provision of information from the individual stations.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I would agree 100% with you. We did have some difficulties in getting information, not from all stations, but we did have difficulties. And yes, there needs to be 100%. Collaboration and compliance between the stations and national office when it comes to giving or sharing not only information, with the audit team, but information back and forth between the national office and the individual station, because we did find it difficult in certain instances to get information and did have to ask a number of times for it.
Yeah, and if I may, Melinda, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it was like pulling teeth this year. And I could say a lot more in close as to which stations were cooperative, transparent, and easy to get information out of, and which stations had to have a lot of work done on the part of my staff here at National in order to extract the necessary data for us to be able to move forward with the audit. So it's been there's a lot of room for organizational improvement and a more collaborative and defined relationship and expectation between National and the stations, particularly regarding these business functions. And I think those can be improved over time, but they weren't previously. And now what you're saying about us being a technology-driven business and why don't we use it better, well, that is a very good question on a radio perspective as well. We don't have an internet radio station. We very poorly engage with social media and digital deployment compared to our competitors. So we need a dramatic amount of improvement in, our digital interaction overall as a radio network, just in terms of our public face doing radio. In terms of the backside, again, of like dealing with the governance and the organizational structure, there have been members of the PNB, and I believe one of them is on this call, but who have been working to identify possibly a video conferencing service that would be appropriate for the size and number of our board. And there are, of course, different versions of those realities, from shared desktop to actual, video conferencing, seeing your colleagues' faces. And another one of our colleagues was investigating the legal ramifications as to whether a video conference meeting could substitute for an in-person board meeting. So there is some active research going on to see what we might be able to do to reduce the cost of in-person meetings while still accommodating a collaborative working relationship between the board members that, allows them to communicate effectively at these meetings. So obviously we're facing, tremendous financial pressures right now, and the elections did cost us $250,000 last year. So I think that there is certainly some strong motivation to see if we can't find some effective means of conducting our meetings and our governance activities in a more cost-effective fashion.
I'm real glad to hear you're doing that, Summer, because that's very important as far as I'm concerned. I've watched for years with total just complete shock at how much they've spent on those trips. And
ridiculous. I think different ways that we can effectively use technology to achieve some cost savings here will be very helpful to this organization's long-term survival.
Awesome.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, David. I'm back on the call.
William, for the stack.
Fred, did you hear me? This is Jane Kate when I'm back on the call.
Fred, this is Margie. I just have a point of, order or something. I don't know what those points are. we have about 10 minutes until 7:30, and I haven't yet heard anything that I thought would cause us to go off the stream, but I'm wondering if there's somebody out there with a question that they think might do that, and we should figure out how to deal with that before we passed the time when we said we were going to be off stream.
Chair, Chair, this is Lawrence. I think one of my concerns may be a point that may have to go into executive session. I don't know. Did I need to ask that question?
Fred, are you on the line?
Uh-oh.
Chair, did you hear me?
Yes, I'm there. I was on mute. I apologize. How many people think they have questions that have to be asked in executive session? Lawrence is one.
Well, I don't know. That's why I wanted to ask to see what the panel thought.
Because Margie is right. We're almost at 7:30, and that's when we want to go and do a public session vote. Well, we're still in public session. Why don't we try? Why don't we say that we will be back definitely at 7:40 and go into executive session now, and see if we can.
I'd like to ask a question, can I jump in for a moment, gentlemen?
Yes, go ahead, Summer.
Perhaps you should inquire if any of the members feel the necessity to go into executive session. They may not. They may have had enough questions answered as regards this financial statement. I do think there is an opportunity once we get the management letter, which is entirely an executive session matter, that would give an opportunity for perhaps some of the more some of the questions that people have at least touched upon this evening, but they're not necessary in order to approve of the financial statements themselves. So perhaps you should ask if there's a need to go into an executive session. If there isn't, then perhaps the financial statement can be approved.
Knowing that there'll be an opportunity probably in the not-too-distant future to discuss the management aspects of it.
All right, Chair. My question has nothing to do with management.
I think Lawrence should ask his question without somebody's name or name of a contract and see if anybody thinks it's executive session material. It probably is not.
I agree.
Or maybe just generally state the nature of the question.
Sure. Let me just generally say, if I could, Chair, whenever you're ready.
Okay, Lawrence. Well, actually, is Jane Gatewood back?
Yeah, this is Jane. Can I ask my question?
Oh, she's Clara.
You're next on the stack, so let's take you.
Okay. And we'll just for a point of clarification, Paul, on the interdivision reporting on page 18, for example, this is just an example of an ongoing concern that we have had in our local station board finance committees, where we really don't have a sense of how certain things are accounted for. So, for example, one question, I see the $185,735 under WPFW accounts payable as of September 30th, 2012. So just a quick question, would anything payable to essential services be included in that line item, or is that strictly outside vendors?
You know, I will let Raul respond to that. We report, Jane, right? We report on the consolidated numbers,
right?
Yeah.
So we don't opine on the individual station.
Okay.
I could answer that.
If I could just be just a slight little bit more broad, and then I'm sure you can answer it all completely. So,
yeah.
For example, the CPV funds that come in, we understand that they're used to pay for certain things at the national level, but they're supposedly funds that are coming to WPFW. And so at a local level, we would like financial statements that explain that a little more clearly. And I understand they're not part of this, but since I saw that $185,735 accounts payable, it kind of triggered that question. For example, does that include essential services? But the question is bigger than that, but that was just a small example.
Yes, I can answer that. Actually, central services that are billed by the National Office and the Public Archives, Pacifica Radio Archives, are passed through the intercompany accounts. They are not really an accounts payable in terms of the Pacifica Foundation as an overall, as an organization. It's a transfer of intercompany liability, and it's kind of eliminated at the final consolidated financial statements. So in answer to your question, no, the accounts payable figures represent what is owed as of the balance sheet date, other than the other than what's owed to the national office or the other radio station, and it goes through that process of the intercompany.
Is there anywhere that those balances appear in this statement? In other words, we hear these rumors that there's some big unpaid balance to Central Services, and we kind of understood that the 2012 payments for Central Services included repayment for back years, but we can't find any record of what the balance was at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year for us. So within this, I understand it's not really related to the statement, but within the statement, is any of that captured at all?
Definitely. We are issuing financial statements that would show the intercompany receivable, and obviously that's not part of the audit report. The audit report is presented for Pacifica Foundation Radio as a whole, and not on its individual units. It will be a supplemental information that is provided, I believe, in page 21 of the draft, and it shows an intercompany interdivision payable. PFW has accumulated about $1 million worth of payable to the other Pacifica Foundation divisions.
Where do I see that?
It's second, I believe third to the last page, when you have the statement of financial position by division.
Okay. I see 185. Oh, I see. Interdivision payables. That's what the one. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
As you
and
can see.
And then would the CPB funds, which we understood paid certain things at a national level, would they offset that in any way?
Correct. What happens when we receive the CPB funding at the national office, what happens is we give you credit for that, and that would be reduced by the amount of funding allocated for WPFW.
Okay. Well, we'll follow up with you on that for our local statements, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Chair, am I on?
Next.
Summer, I just wanted to say one other thing about the CPB, if I could, before you went to the next person.
Go right ahead.
Sure. Jane, just to lightly touch on that, you know, the CPB funds are allocated to each of the individual stations. The only portion that we pay out of national is the restricted portion that has to go for national programming. We generally disperse the funds directly to the local station. The only time when that doesn't happen is if we've already advanced funds to cover things such as payroll or things that would be eligible for the CPB funds that are directly attributable to that station, and then that's handled as a bill back. But just to be clear, we do not retain CPB funds for Central Services or anything else that is an attributable national office bill. They are always attributable to the local expenses, and sometimes it's just a bookkeeping issue in terms of, you know, who's put forward which money for which bill at what time. But I just want to be clear on that, and that's part of keeping the discrete accounting that CPB has required, is to actually track not just the dispersal that it went to the individual station, but what it was allocated to at that particular station as well. And that will be part of what's going on with tracking of CPB funds going forward.
Okay, Chair, here's my question. Can I go?
Yes, you're next on the stack, Lawrence.
Thank you. And first of all, you know, I'd like to thank the auditors for all the hard work. I know that you guys want to turn this amount of pressure, and really did a banged-up job in putting this together. I appreciate it. So I'd like to go back to something that the IED brought up in regards to savings of $900,000 at WBAI as a result of the layoffs. My question is, are those savings permanent? And the second one is, when you say that you're going to start renegotiating with vendors, does that also include the union bargaining units that are at each individual station as well? So if you could answer that, or are the layoffs permanent, and are you counting that $900,000 saving that you mentioned as a permanent as permanent cash flow in the black in the cash flow process?
Sure. Okay. So let me be clear. The unions are not vendors. Vendors are people with whom we have contracts who are not employees.
I understand that. That's why I mentioned.
I mean,
we're also going to negotiate with the unions in good faith that you're dealing with the vendors.
Yeah. No, I've been negotiating with the union in good faith. I mean, considering how bad this is, we have very open communications and we are in regular contact. So, no, I mean, I'm always going to negotiate with unions in good faith. The vendors refers to people who are not our employees, some of whom we acquire programming from and things of that nature. And obviously I can't go into great detail on an open call, but I have already negotiated one vendor contract down significantly, and I will be working on the other one again. In terms of the layoff savings, obviously permanent is extraordinarily relative in Pacifica. I perceive that we will go through a series of changes at New York. I'm only dealing with the immediate. Those were $900,000 per year in savings in terms of the layoffs. What adjustments may be made over time? One would hope that the station will recover and the necessary things will be done to rebuild it, and that hopefully it will hire some staff back at some point. So I'm not looking into the 2 or 3 year crystal ball to know that we would still have staff reductions at this level, because it's quite frankly hard to run a radio station when staff has been reduced to the level that it has been in New York, and that's difficult. So I'm looking at, right now we've been bleeding cash at a six-figure level in New York, and the whole network is in serious condition. And this is an immediate, we have to deal with severance. But even after I take that out, I mean, we're still saving more than $500,000 this year. So I'm looking at this year. And combining that also with the rent that we're saving not being in Wall Street, it's, if you look at last year, what we were spending in New York and what we're going to be spending this year in New York, it's a well over $1 million difference, which is obviously, you know, you can do math all day long to see, you know, how much are we going to have in reduced fund drive because we've made these changes. I mean, those are all, some of those are unknown factors, but the known factor is this is a drastic reduction in our outflow of cash at a station that has been unable to balance its income and its expenses for 10 straight years. So yes, I'm not predicting into the future, Lawrence. I'm just dealing with right now. And right now, it's a significant cash savings at a time when we desperately need to bring this whole thing under control so that we don't, you know, lose something we value.
Just a clarification. What we mean by the annual savings, we won't see the full savings, annual savings, until the beginning of 2014, which is in a month or and a half from now. That would show the first full year savings would be shown at the 2014 fiscal year, since there's only about a month and a half left for the fiscal year 2013 that we're talking about, and we just implemented the layoff as of August 10th, I believe, and so you won't see that for 2013, but rather the full year would be 2014.
Thank you, Raul. I appreciate that.
Okay. The next person I have on the stack is William, but this will be your second time around. Is there any other member of the committee who hasn't asked a question who would like to at this point in time? Also, what is the sense of the committee as to if they'd like to go into executive session, or they feel the need to go into executive session?
This is Margie. I don't think there's any need to go into executive session. Lawrence's was the prickliest question we had to have answered. I think we're fine.
Yeah. Thank you, Margie. I feel that way, too. William, yes?
Point of order, Fred, my preference as an auditor, typically when we present to audit committees, as a matter of order, we do request an executive session. If we could have a short one, that would be appreciated.
How long would your report be in that session, do you think?
I think the executive session would take no more than 5 or 10 minutes at the most.
Okay, well, it's almost 7:40 at this point. If people would like to come back to the public stream at, let's say, 8 o'clock and complete and have the actual vote at that point in time.
William asked to be on the stack, and I think it was probably for open session.
Okay, hold on a second, Brenda. I'm just suggesting that we have a discussion and vote on the audit at 8 o'clock at time certain.
James,
and
I will
allow William to ask his question, and then maybe we can retire to executive session for Paul to make a short report. William, you want to go? You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. O'Grady. I heard you talking about you're going to report to the audit committee. I hear the traditional phrase management letter. Is there more than one document, or is it the same document?
It's actually three documents. We don't utilize, and historically, the term has of course been management letter, which typically contained the auditor's observations and recommendations on internal controls and areas where operating efficiencies and the like could be achieved. Our professional standards actually require us to issue two letters, one of which is called a communication with those charged with governance. And that communication I referred to earlier in the call discusses a number of items that are of interest to both the auditor and the audit committee. They discuss the auditor's responsibility, the responsibility of management, the nature of an audit. Some of the key components of an audit: the fact that there are estimates and financials, the fact that there are certain disclosures that are more sensitive in the financials. So that is the first letter. The second letter is a communication on internal control, where we are required to make certain communications to the audit committee on internal control. And that is what we call a 115 letter. And then the final letter, which actually is not a required communication, but what is what we call our other observations letter, is a letter that we present to management. And most of our clients will share that letter also with the audit committee. And that includes other observations that we have identified during the audit that are not included in the internal control letter or don't rise to the decision to include or the requirement to include in the internal control letter. So there are three letters, essentially, that we will be putting together.
And the audit committee will get all of them?
The audit committee, as I mentioned on the third letter, two of them are required to be submitted directly to the audit committee. And the third letter, I would say all of my clients, or certainly 99% of my clients, as a matter of good corporate governance, share that. And I know that the Pacifica Foundation, in its commitment to that, I would imagine that they would share that with the audit committee, yes.
And, yes, William, of course, we would share the management letter with the audit committee.
Thank you.
That goes without saying.
Well, one last point, Mr. O'Grady, do you know in the past we haven't, the audit committee has not approved the audit. Do you have knowledge as to why this year the audit committee is being asked to approve the audit?
That's not true, William.
That's not
the
true,
audit
William.
Committee the prior 2 years as well,
we,
I believe.
We recommend to the we recommended approval to the PMB last year.
Right.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you, Jane. You were secretary.
I was secretary, yeah.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that last year. I know in prior years it wasn't done.
That may have been an error. It is supposed
how,
to be a body audit committee.
How did that come to be? Was there sort of changes in the procedures?
No, it's standard nonprofit practice that the audit committee would approve your audit. As it's,
yeah,
I can't speak. It might have been done.
There may have been. There was a Senate bill here in California passed a number of years ago. That dealt with, it was a bill, SB 1262, the Nonprofit Integrity Act, and it dealt with a number of things, but one of the things it dealt with was the requirement of nonprofits above a certain revenue level to establish an audit committee, and that in establishing an audit committee, that audit committee would be responsible for the retention of the auditors and the approval of the audit report. So, if you were to go back many years, there may have been instances when the audit committee was not involved, but certainly for several years, audit committees have been required to approve audits. Now, as I mentioned, this is our first year, so I'm not privy other than to the observation on the phone that it was approved last year to what happened in previous years, but it is pretty standard procedure.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Is it the since our auditor Paul Grady has requested that we go into executive session? Is there any objection to doing so?
Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay. This is Campbell, and I was secretary when Nia Bidiaco was chair, and we did have approval of the audit committee of the audit. Second point that I wanted to make on this is that. Since the management letter would be prepared, as I gather, within a week or a week and a half, we should, I think, meet before the September 24th date so that we can review the management letter with the auditor.
Thank you, Campbell.
Sure.
Are you requesting, therefore, a special meeting of the audit committee in the next 1 or 2 weeks?
Yes. So
How do other members of the committee feel about that?
When?
Are you up to, yes. Go ahead. Who is that?
Jane Gatewood for the STAC. I wonder if we could defer this question until after we hear the report in executive session tonight from
yeah.
Okay, thank you, Jane. Okay, is it the will of the audit committee that we go into executive session now?
Yes.
Yes.
I hear no. Are there any objections?
No.
Okay. We